Greetings, everyone, and welcome to this edition of In Accord. As you saw in last week's episode with Mr. Taylor, we have a lot going on here at the office and elsewhere, so that means I have several news items to cover first, and I'll start with an update on Mr. Jim Frank's status after his surgery on July 1st. Everything is going according to plan, and he was dismissed from the hospital and returned home on Sunday, July 6th. He's recuperating well and following the doctor's orders for recovery and is grateful, of course, to be back home. Most of all, he and Sharon are grateful for God's help and for your prayers and support. He plans to write a member letter in the next week or so and personally update you on what he's been through, so I'll leave those details to him. On the travel scene, Mr. Joel Meeker is currently on a trip to Africa, mainly focusing on trying to procure a feast site in Uganda where the members in Rwanda and other surrounding countries can keep the feast this year. I think you're well aware of his past reports of the difficulty the brethren in Rwanda are facing with the increasingly strict government regulations being imposed on many churches, ours included. Well, it looks like he has a good lead on a potential feast site, but everyone would certainly appreciate your prayers that a good location can be confirmed and, of course, for them to find favor with the government so that the Rwandan members can resume meeting. Also, please keep their pastor, Mr. Mundeli, in your prayers as he deals with some very serious health problems. Mr. and Mrs. Horchak are also on a trip to Africa, visiting the ministry and members in Zambia, Zimbabwe, Malawi, and South Africa. We'll look forward to hearing his report on that trip in a future In Accord. I will be making a quick trip to Mexico City on Friday, July 11th, for the next session of the International Leadership Program, and returning on Sunday, just in time for the first session of the Foundation Institute Continuing Education Program that will begin on Monday. One other news item. In the aftermath of Mr. Dick Thompson's death a few weeks ago, it became necessary to fill his spot on the Ministerial Board of Directors. We have since proceeded to go through the process defined in our governing documents, and I'm pleased to report that Mr. Mike Canisco, our pastor in Beloit, Wisconsin, has been selected to take Mr. Thompson's place. I want to turn now to a far more serious topic, and it is one that I really wrestled with regarding this episode of In Accord, and I'll explain that in a moment. But first, let's address a situation that has really hit close to home. If you live outside the United States, as you may or may not know, July 4th, Independence Day, is one of the biggest celebratory holidays of the year. This year, though, it was marred by the tragic loss of life due to the flash floods that swept through parts of the hill country in south central Texas. Now, we have heard from our pastors in the area, and they report that none of our members were physically affected, although Sabbath services in San Antonio were canceled last week. However, this has certainly emotionally affected people all over. It has been very distressing to see the reports and the photos and videos steadily streaming in over the past few days and to see the death toll rising. As I am recording this on Tuesday morning, the number of victims is now over 100, with dozens still missing. From what I've read, this is the second highest number of people lost in a flood in the United States in the last 50 years, only behind the 1,400 who died in Hurricane Katrina in 2005. It was almost unimaginable to hear the reports of the Guadalupe River rising 26 feet, that's 8 meters, in only 45 minutes, and to see the videos of the devastation. Now, the Guadalupe is a beautiful river with many camping spots and resorts and summer camps, most of which were in full use. And many people near the river's edge never had a chance in the nighttime and early morning period when the floodwaters rose so fast. Now, what makes this more personal to many of us is that Kerr County and the city of Kerrville is where we have had several Feast of Tabernacles in the past years at a facility right on the river. And anyone who has been there would recognize scenes from the city in the news reports. But personalizing it even more was the fact that 27 of the victims were children and counselors participating in a summer camp. And that's something we deeply identify with because we cherish our campers and our camp program. I doubt very few of us can comprehend what it would be like to have to deal with that. So this event hit literally close to home, just a few hours away from here, and emotionally close to home, as we can easily identify with the victims. Now, I had originally planned to update you about some of the developments in media, but to be honest, these floods have really occupied my mind the last couple of days. So I decided to save the media update for my next In Accord in a few weeks and instead talk more about this. However, I was wrestling with what to say because there's so much that goes through your mind. But Monday morning I read something that led me to focus in and home in on a very specific issue that is important for us to consider and can be of great spiritual value to all of us in a spiritual sense and a principle that's very important. I read a segment in an article about a family whose lifestyle and riches many people might envy. Clark Hunt is the owner of the American football team, the Kansas City Chiefs. He's a very prosperous man in his own right, but he's only one of the broader Hunt family, which is one of the wealthiest in the United States, with an estimated net worth of over $24 billion. But the Hunts, too, are in mourning because one of the children in their family, a 9-year-old little girl named Janie, was one of the 27 Camp Mystic campers lost in the flood. Now, I mentioned Clark Hunt because Janie was his cousin. And his wife, Tavia, posted a message on Instagram that I thought articulated very well what probably many people are feeling and struggling with. She wrote this: "How do we trust a God who is supposed to be good, all-knowing, and all-powerful, but who allows such terrible things to happen, even to children?" Now, if you read only that one sentence, you might think she's bitter. And that's indeed where a lot of bitter or disillusioned people end the conversation. But that's only part of what she wrote. She went on to state, "That is a sacred and tender question, and one the Bible doesn't shy away from. Scripture is filled with the cries of those whose hearts have been shattered, who still wrestle to trust the same God they believe allowed the pain." You don't detect bitterness in her complete statement, but it's clear you detect questioning and grasping for answers to some of life's most difficult questions. And she's right in that the question of why does God allow evil and suffering, that's been around probably for nearly as long as humanity has existed. You certainly read about it in the Bible. Now, we have a booklet, we have articles, and a recent Life Open Truth Presents episode on that subject. But it's still one that many people, and sometimes we ourselves, have to try to work through when tragedies like this hit so close to home. You know, every person has to deal with such questions sooner or later in life, and often multiple times in life, because loss is part of life. Now, there are different levels of loss, of course, and obviously this is one of the deepest levels. We can lose our wealth, we can lose our health, we can lose relationships, but the loss of loved ones is among the toughest, especially when it's untimely and unnatural and on a scale such as this, and when it hits this close to the heart. Those times force many tough questions into our minds. Now, my purpose here is not to anticipate and try to answer all of the questions, because that would take probably multiple sermons. But I do want to put our minds on a vital spiritual principle about the nature of questioning itself. And that is the need to understand the difference between questioning and doubting. Let me ask first, is it wrong to question God? Well, the short answer is no. Many of God's people have questioned God. You may immediately think of Job or David. Sometimes the answers come very quickly. Other times we search for a long time. The problem or danger is when questions turn into doubts or spring from doubt. Doubting is wrong. Doubting is dangerous. Doubting takes us down a wrong path of thinking. But it's natural to question. In fact, questioning is part of our relationship with God, to ask Him questions as we seek knowledge and understanding. And sometimes the question is, why? Now, the Bible answers this, addresses it, and it helps us to draw the distinction between what is healthy and unhealthy. And it is the distinction between questions versus doubts. Spiritually healthy questioning comes from a heart of faith. It's seeking greater understanding, or perhaps a heart that's aching and reaching out to God. It's not from a heart of disbelief. It's a heart that is seeking to process or understand something, to comprehend something deeper than what we can see. It eventually leads us closer to God when it is spiritually healthy. Now, spiritually unhealthy questioning comes from a heart of doubt, where there is a basic lack of trust in God, His promises, His care, His character, and that shows itself in wavering, in suspicion and skepticism. And if that's allowed to grow, eventually it leads to rejection. A couple of examples. When the angel Gabriel told Mary she would have a baby and be the mother of Jesus, she questioned. She said, "How can this be, since I do not know a man?" But it's apparent that she believed what would happen, but she did not understand how it would happen. So she was questioning and seeking to comprehend something that humanly makes no sense. So the angel explained it. On the other hand, earlier in Luke 1, it tells us that when the same angel appeared to Zacharias to tell him that his wife Elizabeth was going to have a baby, he said, "How shall I know this? For I'm an old man, and my wife is well advanced in years." And the angel answered and said to him, "I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God, and was sent to speak to you and bring you these glad tidings. But behold, you will be mute and not able to speak until the day these things take place, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their own time." He had a similar question, but his question came from a heart of doubt, unlike Mary's. David, in times of trial, questioned God. For example, in Psalm 13:1, he cried out, "How long, O Lord? Will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me?" You can read several other psalms he wrote, but his questions were never from a position of weak faith or rebellion. They were just honest, raw emotions that he was sharing in a very intimate way with the God he trusted. Jesus, in fact, repeated David's question, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Honest emotions, but not doubt in God or doubting God's love. But on the other hand, the Israelites continually questioned God from a position of doubt and distrust, leading God to say in Numbers 14:11, "How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all the signs I have performed among them?" Their questions from the position of doubt and distrust always led them to rebel against God. Now David, after posing his questions in the early part of Psalm 13, a few verses later said, "But I have trusted in your mercy. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation." He did have a basis of trust. And trust is very closely tied to faith. It's an element of faith. Questioning that seeks for answers has a basis in trust. It allows us to say, "You know, I don't understand. I wish I had answers to my questions. But I do trust that there are answers, that God has answers. I trust that He has ways of seeing things and has understanding of things, even though I don't understand them yet. Yet. I will someday. It may be in this life, it may be in the next, but I don't doubt that God has answers." That's the right, healthy basis for questions. Now, this is so important because events that create suffering and evil always generate questions. And sometimes they're tough questions. That's natural. But just keep in mind the distinction between questioning and doubting, and guard the mind. Satan wants to take every person down the road of doubt. It's one of his tactics that goes back to the Garden of Eden. Implant doubt about God. Doubt leads to disbelief. Disbelief turns into distancing ourselves, and distancing ourselves turns into destruction of our relationship with God. Well, today you got more of a sermonette than a news report, but I hope you have found this a helpful principle and something to think about and keep in mind. As we pray for those who are suffering and physically do what is within your means to help in any way possible, let's use these events to mentally and spiritually prepare for the times when we have to deal with our own losses in life and find ourselves asking questions of God. So please note, please note that due to some changes and challenges in scheduling, we're going to take a break and not have an In Accord episode next week. But we will return to our regular programming on July 24th when Mr. Dave Myers will be hosting. And with that, we will conclude this week's edition. I wish all of you a very restful, thoughtful, and spiritually profitable Sabbath.